Futuro.
I don't think that people understood, not even this administration understood, the catastrophic damage that had been done over the last 4 years.
Uno, dos, tres.
Welcome to In the Thick, a podcast about politics, race, and culture. I'm Julio Ricardo Varela, solo hosting today while Maria is out. And I am so excited because I have these two fabulous guests. From Brooklyn, New York, is Danielle Moody, host of the show Woke AF and co-host of the podcast Democracy-ish. What's up, Danielle? Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
I know. And from Washington, D.C. is the fabulous Natalie Baptiste, opinion writer with the HuffPost. Welcome back, Natalie. Like, opinion writer. Like, now you get paid for takes. I love it.
They pay me for my takes. Honestly, I'm living the dream. So glad to be back with you.
It's so good. So listen, before we get to the conversation, just a reminder to our listeners that we're still recording remotely. So you may hear some background noise. So anyway, we're going to get into President Joe Biden's first year in office. And from an ongoing global pandemic to literally no movement at all on immigration reform to bipartisan blocks on legislation like voting rights, there's so much to unpack. But we first want to start with a temperature check, because we often say living in this country and covering this administration can often feel like we're going to go one step forward and two steps back. So before we get into the latest political news, how are you all doing? Let's start with you, Danielle. How you doing?
You know, Julio, honestly, I'm just trying to stay sane. I feel absolutely crazy most days. And I don't even think it's one step forward, two steps back. I think it's like a half a step forward and 10,000 back.
Damn.
That this country continues to take. And I'm worried, right? I am super worried. So I'm meditating daily. I am working out and trying to keep myself in a grounded place.
Yeah, no, the working out. Yeah, I'm with you on that. Natalie, what about you? I mean, what's your temperature check these days?
What a great thing that Danielle said, half a step forward and 10,000 steps back. See, now I feel less crazy because that's exactly where I am.
Misery loves company. You know what I'm saying?
And honestly, I thought it was my fault. I was like, was I expecting too much? Maybe I'm the problem. No, it's the political climate that's the problem. I'm perfect, actually.
I love it. But here's the thing, right? Let's think about this for a second. This presidency with, I mean, I don't feel it, right? I feel like all of a sudden they woke up. That's the part where you're like, why weren't you doing this a year ago? That's where I'm at, because I'm like, if you did this right off the bat, I wouldn't be feeling the way the both of you are feeling, because I'm feeling the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about Biden's first year. So he first took office on January 21st, 2021, and the country was reeling from an attempted coup at the U.S. Capitol. 1 year later, there has been little progress made throughout the investigation into the insurrection to really hold any elected official accountable. Even though we know several government officials were involved in inciting the attacks, obviously including former President Trump. And then when it comes to immigration, while immigration and customs enforcement arrests have decreased, advocates are still calling for the Biden administration to end the use of private ICE facilities and deportation policies like Title 42 and Remain in Mexico, which I'm going to say the Biden administration is still defending. And also, just a note, when Biden gave the 2-hour press conference last week, there were like over 70 questions asked, not one on immigration, just saying. And then thousands of unaccompanied migrant children are still being held by the U.S. That's a fact. I tweet out all the stats every day. So a year into the presidency, Biden's approval ratings have dropped to about 42%, the second lowest after Trump. This is also influenced by the lack of coordinated government action on the COVID-19 pandemic. And now we're in a midterm year where the fate of the slim Democratic majority in Congress is seriously under threat. Natalie, what do you make of Biden's first year?
A great question. A lot of things. I think the most important thing, though, to remember about Biden's first year is that not a lot of people were expecting a lot, and still somehow they didn't meet the requirements.
Damn.
The bar was in hell. Joe, all we wanted were some COVID tests. Mm-hmm. They waited a whole year and they're like, okay, we're going to give you guys COVID tests. I mean, if you had done this in like June, July,
right
before Delta hit, imagine where we could be right now. Imagine. And I think that's the most disappointing thing. We weren't asking for the world and we got nothing.
Right. What about you, Danielle?
Yeah. I mean, Natalie is right. Like the bar was in the sewer. And so, you know, with that being the place that we're starting from, you know, anything would have seemed better than what it was that we had had. But at the end of the day, I think that we had too high of expectations of what it meant to have grownups return to the head of the table. Mm. I think that we assumed, you know, probably mostly out of desperation, that this administration was going to be able to come in like the cleaning crew, sanitize the White House, and we were going to get back to a place of normality. I don't think that people understood, not even this administration understood, the catastrophic damage that had been done over the last 4 years.
Right.
And they thought that they could come in, and I'm going to be very glib here, knowing that I too have had people that have passed away from COVID, but I believe that they thought that they could come in, you know, have this beautiful lighting of candles, right, on, you know, on the National Mall, have these moments of remembrance, and that was going to be enough. All we need to do is show empathy, and then we're going to be able to move forward. I do not believe that these folks came in understanding that our democracy is under threat, and that there was a sense of urgency outside of, you know, economic relief from COVID and from our economy reeling from there, for them to recognize that, oh, no. Right? Like, oh, voting rights, that's a thing, right? Free and fair elections. Oh, that's something we should have an eye on. Oh, the fact that, you know, 2 weeks before I put my hand on the Bible, there were people building a gallows on the steps of the Capitol building, right? Like, I don't think that they really put these puzzle pieces together.
The severity of,
yeah.
I mean, Natalie, that's a really good point. And just to stay with this for a second before we move on, an underestimation of what was out there? And do you think it's because in the end, I'm totally leading you on this question, but do you think it's because white supremacy really is bipartisan in a lot of ways? It's just a different type. You know what I'm saying? That they just were like, oh, just, you know, we got the black and brown votes. We're good.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
100%. And you know what white supremacy looks like, you know, among good white liberals is, I always give this example, right? You know, so we'll take January 6th, a very obvious, bad, scary thing. And, you know, you have your nice white liberal friends who are like, well, it's because of XYZ. It's because it's like this. It's because they have no money. It's because they're afraid of change, right? And I'm like, why do you feel the need to couch that in an excuse? It's because they're bad, racist people. I mean, it's very simple. And it's because for them, they're like, well, what about my uncle who voted for Trump? I'm like, that's right. I'm calling your uncle a racist. That's exactly what I'm doing. I'm absolutely correct. It's a hard pill to swallow.
Exactly.
But until you get there, we're just going to be stuck in this cycle.
Danielle,
I mean,
yeah, go ahead, Danielle.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, like, you know, let's all remember what it was that Martin Luther King Jr. said to be mindful of. Mm. It wasn't of the KKK. It wasn't of the White Citizens Council. He said to be mindful of liberal moderates, white moderates.
Yeah.
They are our biggest enemy. And it's because they want to sit around and make thousands of excuses for bad, white, rabid, racist, violent behavior.
Yeah, that's a lot to unpack, and I'm so glad I asked the question. So listen, we actually now want to shift a little bit to foreign policy and what's going on in Ukraine and how the Biden administration is reacting. So this is where we're at right now. Tensions at the Ukraine-Russia border have been escalating for weeks now, and around 100,000 Russian troops have been stationed there. There's been a growing threat of Russia invading Ukraine in an effort to take the country. In response, President Biden is reportedly considering sending up to 5,000 troops to the region, along with military aircrafts and ships. This past Sunday, the State Department ordered families and even some staff at the U.S. Embassy in Ukraine to leave. Not surprisingly, Republicans have been criticizing Biden for not taking aggressive action to support the U.S.'s allies and deploy troops. But what often gets missed in the U.S. lens is the impact of the people living there. But luckily for us, we have an ITT all-star out there in Ukraine, Terrell Germain Starr, who's host of Black Diplomats podcast and a non-resident senior fellow at the Atlantic Council's Eurasia Center. He is based in the capital of Ukraine, which is Kiev. So our producer, Arshan Ahata, connected with Terrell. I wonder if he was wearing his red jacket. If you follow him on Instagram, they call him the Black Santa Claus out there because he has this cool little Santa Claus jacket that he wears all the time. But anyway, big distraction. But anyway, this is the context of the situation, according to Terrell. So let's take a listen.
This is also an issue about settler colonialism. Russia is a settler colonial state. In order for Putin to create this powerful Eurasia Union, which is his attempt to reclaim some semblance of what the former Soviet Union used to be, he needs Ukraine. He needs Ukraine for economic reasons. He needs Ukraine for geopolitical reasons. He also needs Ukraine because it has a national semblance. Many people in Ukraine, including Putin, pretty much view Ukraine as an oblast of Russia that just got away. And they're not a sovereign nation. This is some autonomous republic that's just wayward and lost their way. It's about a settler colonial project in which Putin's plan for the Eurasia Union that he wants to complete can only be done if Ukraine is a part of it. That's the main issue. And people aren't talking about it because most of our Western media don't understand race, don't understand geopolitics, and most importantly, don't understand colony. And they probably don't understand that because America, too, is a settler colonial state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's the part right there. I just wrote a piece about Puerto Rico. Like, just call it a colony. So I feel what he's saying there. And it really is something we always talk about with the origins of the U.S. as a settler colonial state that often intervenes in other countries. So, Danielle, what do you make of Terrell's comments and just the U.S. and Western media's reaction to Ukraine?
You know, I think that the United States, that Americans in general, have been receiving a wake-up call into understanding that America is really shady, right? And I mean, I say that, you know, because we look at these other countries and we talk about the propaganda that they are fed, right?
Yeah.
Well, Americans have been ingesting propaganda since birth, which is that we are the shining beacon on the hill. We are the good guys. So anytime that we're going to, quote unquote, intervene in foreign affairs, it's always to make a situation better, right? It's always because they're unstable and we're coming in to do something right. When in fact, that is not the truth, right? That America creates destabilization in a lot of places that it goes to intervene.
Right.
It is never on the best interests of those that are actually living, breathing, working, and trying to survive and thrive on the ground, right? It is always about how do we intervene and how does that approach, how is it measured, is based on what it is that we want to extract. And so, like, I appreciate Terrell being very honest about, like, what lens are we looking at this through?
Correct.
Are we looking at it through the white savior colonist, you know, view, which is how we look at foreign affairs, right? And, like, why is it that the Ukraine is still petitioning to have their voice, to have a seat at the table, right, with their supposed allies who are not allowing them to have a seat at the table? Why are they so out in the open for Russia to be able to continually threaten and intervene with their day-to-day?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think that there are bigger questions, and I'm not a foreign affairs expert.
But you did a really good job. Can we just stop for a second? Here's the thing, Danielle. I love talking about this shit, but I never get to talk about this shit. You know what I'm saying?
It's
like,
true.
I gotta talk about race and being Latino and Puerto Rican, but God forbid I can't talk about Ukraine-Russia relations.
Yeah.
It's like, you are a foreign affairs expert. You just gave a lens into, like, country relationships with each other. So that's all
Thank
I'm saying.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But yeah, I mean, I just think that we need to shift our lens and ask better questions.
Correct.
And of course, Republicans are going to continue to do what they do, which is pounce on any sign, right, of, you know, of a stumble on Biden's part. But I also don't believe that he has been doing the right things as it pertains to our allies from Afghanistan to here.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there's a lot of problems that are happening.
Yeah. Natalie, foreign affairs expert as well for the HuffPost. What are your thoughts? I'm sorry. It's almost like I'm being, like, protective of my friends.
It's true.
You know, looking at it through an American lens, you know, I was born and raised in the United States. There's this tendency to imagine this wonderful little country of ours really as, you know, the beacon on the hill, you know, Ronald Reagan nonsense.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like why, you know, there's supply chain shortages. And so these right wingers go into the grocery stores and they take pictures because there's no kale available. And they're like, this is like communism, except it's happening under capitalism.
Yeah.
But their brains literally can't understand this, right? They're like, there's no way America can be bad. So the reason why there's no kale is because of communism, which literally doesn't make any sense because this is not a communist country. Never has been. All of the bad things happening to you, that's capitalism, baby.
All right, let's get into the latest with voting rights. So last week, we saw voting rights legislation and a move to change the filibuster rules both fail in the Senate, right? After Republicans and... can we just call them like quasi-like Republicans? I know they're known as moderate Democrats. So Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema voted against the bills. So, you know, after the Democrats like woke up in New Year's, and it's like, it's all about voting rights now. That's done. I mean, it's just, it's over right now. There's no real big push here. So Ense Ufot, who is the CEO of the New Georgia Project, reacted to the vote on MSNBC this past Sunday and talked about the importance of passing voting rights reform ahead of the midterms. So let's take a listen.
What we saw were two Democratic senators who stood with the Republican Criminal Caucus to deny a path forward for critical voting rights legislation. There have been over 400 anti-voting bills introduced in 49 of 50 states. They've passed in 19 states. And when we look at the 19 states, like Georgia, that where Republicans have given themselves the tools to overcome the results of elections that they don't like, we are in trouble. And so this is not a time to mince words. This is not a time to pull punches. This is a time for us to be extraordinarily and exceedingly clear about what is happening, because they say that you cannot fix what you have not faced.
Natalie, in a recent piece for HuffPost, you wrote about how Biden alone can't fix the structural and systemic issues of this country when a huge chunk of this country won't even admit those issues exist. Boom. But that fight has to start somewhere, especially when it comes to combating voter suppression. So Natalie, what should Democrats do to maintain this? I mean, how does this move forward? Because obviously what just happened in Congress didn't work.
I think something to keep in mind when it comes to Democrats and voting, that's their prescription for everything. Vote for us.
Ooh.
Vote for us and then X will happen.
Damn.
Julio, I did a lot of voting for Democrats. I wasn't super thrilled about voting for Joe Biden, but I was told if I vote for Joe Biden, maybe things will get a little bit better. And so we all went out and voted for Democrats. They've got Congress, they've got the White House, and it's still the same shit. And honestly, at this point, I think that this is going to cost them in November, because you're going to have people who can't vote, people who are tired of voting for Democrats because it's the same thing over and over again. And then you've got two Democratic senators who might as well be Republicans. And of course, they'll argue, well, we can't get rid of them because then the Republicans will have the majority. Well, what's the difference between now and the Republicans having the majority? Mm-hmm. There is no difference. Just do it. Let them be Republicans. I don't want to worry about them anymore.
Danielle, I mean, there's a lot there. And also, like, Republicans are like, there's no voter suppression. You know, I mean, look at Mitch McConnell. We asked him that question last week. It's like he stepped into it. What do you do with this?
Oh, and do you remember what Mitch McConnell said about African Americans? Apparently, we're not actually Americans.
Exactly. Right?
And right. So let's continue to air out the things that are being said out loud that we normally were used to understanding was behind closed doors, right? This administration and just Democrats in general don't get it. Mm. And like, I could use every single explicitive that like would come out of my mouth that you would just have to like bleep, bleep, bleep out, but they do not get it, right? It's not like, oh, well, you know, Kyrsten Sinema, Joe Manchin, let's just continue offering, throwing everything at their feet. What do you need, Joe, for West Virginia to get you to sign on to this bill? Kyrsten, what do you need in order to get you to support democracy? My whole thing if you want to take something out of Republicans' page book, how about you start going after the insurrection that is happening within your own ranks, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Because the problem that is being had right now is this carrot and the stick mentality, except Democrats don't ever seem to understand or know where the hell the stick is. Right? Because they want to keep inviting people into the White House for brunches and lunches and calling them my friend. And I'm like, if that person is your friend, then you have no idea who your enemies are. Mm. And that to me, when you are a leader, when you are in charge and you don't know the distinction between those two, you are showing me that you don't deserve that power. And that is why Democrats right now, people, folks like us at home who are like, you know what? I don't know if I'm going to vote anymore. Because we are literally showing them that their vote doesn't matter. And if Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, if pushing them to Republicans is going to be what wakes people up, then let it be so. Sometimes things have to go up in smoke in order to create new fertile ground.
Amen.
You know, I was just thinking the irony of the fact that Democrats trying to fight voter suppression and then creating their own voter suppression without even knowing it.
Yeah.
because that, I have heard so many progressives and even like hardcore Democrats saying, you know, is this worth it? And that's, I think it's this lack of fight.
None.
I think the Democratic Party is still stuck in the fact that like, this is the 80s and the 90s where people talk to each other. It's like, mm-hmm. It's not, people.
Mm.
You get the ball and you need to win.
Well, Natalie said something that like, I don't think that we talk about enough, right? Which is the fact that Joe Biden, you were told to vote for him, right? You were told that like, he's the bridge builder. He's the one that's been working in the Senate for 36 years, right? There's also an assumption that was made there that the old white man was going to be able to continue doing business as usual with other old white men. And he thought that his whiteness was going to be able to provide cover and currency for him to get things done. And what Joe Biden did not realize, right? And I don't even think he is waking up to it now, is that these people who he thought were his friends were always racist.
Yeah.
They were always about pro-whiteness.
Yeah.
And his association, whether it be with Barack Obama or Kamala Harris, was going to be part of the anvil for him.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, wow. Okay. All right. So we've been talking about the Republican strategy since Democrats took control of the White House and Congress, which is the same strategy of Trumpism, which is essentially using white supremacy to gain and maintain power. Right. And we've already have seen so many impacts of this. For example, on his first day in office, Governor Glenn Youngkin of Virginia signed a number of executive orders, including making masking in public schools optional and stopping the teaching of, quote, divisive concepts, listing critical race theory as an example of a divisive concept. So on Sunday, Florida State Senator Chevron Jones was on MSNBC's American Voices with the fabulous Alicia Menendez, a friend of the show, to talk about a similar bill in Florida. So let's listen to that.
I do know that I've stopped calling it critical race theory, mm-hmm. and I've just called it what it is. It is the governor who has been touting this across the country and across the state of Florida and trying to stop the teaching of true American Black history. He called it the Individual Freedom Bill, but this title is simply a guise to work up people who are not familiar with the process. Republicans cloak themselves in freedom, but clearly they pick and choose which freedoms and for whom they support these said freedoms. This is not a bill about freedom. This is a bill to totally distort what true American history is.
So we're seeing fights against vaccine mandates in schools and workplaces across the country. And I'm sure you saw this, right? In Virginia last week at a Page County School Board meeting, a mother threatened to bring loaded weapons to her children's school over a mask mandate.
Mm-hmm.
She was actually charged by the Luray Police Department on Friday for violating a Virginia statute that prohibits verbal threats of bodily harm on school property. So that's just one recent example. You know, and the reality is that the Republican Party has capitalized on incidents like that or these other fights that are happening, right, with critical race theory and other things like that to mobilize voters in local and state elections and to stop the Biden administration from passing any meaningful legislation outside of the infrastructure bill.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been saying that Democrats need to recalibrate their strategy or this backsliding democracy will be even further threatened. So Natalie, big question here. What do we do as journalists, commentators, and just citizens of this country? What do we need to do to preserve democracy right now?
Ooh, we've got to end both sides.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, say more.
We must end both sides.
Say more.
I mean, this woman who threatened to bring a bunch of loaded guns to school over a mask mandate is not the same thing as DC's mayor being like, you need to be fully vaccinated before you go to the bar. And yet, you've got plenty of mainstream media being like, well, the Republicans are doing this and the Democrats are doing that. I'm like, no, these are not two sides of the same coins. The Democrats can barely get their act together. The Republicans are telling people, yes, go out and do violence over wearing a piece of cloth over your face. What could possibly go wrong? I mean, it's just, it drives me absolutely insane to see two very different things like in the same paragraph. I'm like, these don't belong in the same story. These are two very different things.
Yeah. And I think in the part of it is even the people who say that, because I agree with you, right? This false equivalency has become the standard of media. But not only, I mean, but you're just, you know, you're just a radical Black opinion writer. And Julio, you're just a communist Puerto Rican opinion writer. What the hell are you saying? You know, why? You don't get it. You're not a real journalist, right? And it's the same thing. The both sides thing is such...
Someone once emailed me to tell me that, in fact, I was like just some leftist Black writer. And I'm like, okay, but that's a compliment.
Thank you. I'm going to wear that with a badge. So
I am. Thank you.
Good for you.
Thank you for reading.
Yeah, that's what I say. Danielle, what about you? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the same thing. Like, I'm tired of the false equivalency. I'm tired of people thinking that, especially folks in mainstream media, believing that their neutrality is somehow, you know, synonymous with being a good journalist. Mm. Tell the goddamn truth. I say it every day on my own show. I say it all the time on Twitter. Tell the friggin' truth. You know, you have this parent who is inciting violence, but then the media will cover it as things got emotional at the school board. Things did not get emotional at the school board. You had a psychopath walk into a school board meeting and say that she was going to bring in every loaded weapon.
Yeah.
Right? Like, she was insinuating that she was going to start a school shooting, right? Because she doesn't want her kid to wear a mask. You have Ron DeSantis down in Florida passing another piece of legislation that is the Don't Say Gay legislation. These places are petri dishes for what Republicans want to do across the country and will do because they run 28 states, right? So my feeling here is that the mainstream media needs to wake the hell up to their complicit nature in all of this by saying, oh, well, you know, tensions are high on both sides. Well, I don't know any Democrats that are threatening to kill people over vaccines, right? Or over the false idea that critical race theory is being taught in kindergarten.
Let's move on to our final segment, which we call Binge-Worthy, or What Are You Binging On? So what's something you've watched, read, or listened to recently that you can't stop thinking about? Doesn't have to be journalism. Doesn't have to be a show. It could be a book, a poem, even a Twitter thread. Danielle, why don't we start with you? What are you binging on these days?
I just finished the first part of the final season of Ozark on Netflix.
Okay.
And it is insane. But also, I know that you said it didn't have to be political, but I'm telling you, the insights into how dirty politics has become, you can watch right now in the first part of the last season of Ozark. It's brilliant.
You will use your influence. I will walk away from my business. I will be free of the threat of arrest or assassination and to move freely to the United States.
Omar Navarro wants to cut a deal with the FBI.
It's written well. It's shot well.
Really?
The acting is incredible. Yeah.
So I should dive in. It's one of those things that I've avoided.
Oh, why?
Okay.
Oh, my God. No.
I don't know. I don't know. Because there's so many damn choices out there. And I'm just like, my mind explodes. It's like, I got to watch like 80 things. Anyway, so it's worth it. You telling me this, I accept the recommendation.
It's totally worth it. And then if you want like totally to get away from your device, to get away from, you know, everything, I am obsessed with African futurist writer Nnedi Okafor, who just released not one, but two new books this month.
Ooh.
The third installment of her Akata Witch series just came out. She centers young Nigerian girls as the protagonists in her stories,
yeah,
who are warriors and brilliant. It's like taking Octavia Butler into like, you know, the 23rd, 24th centuries. It's brilliant.
Right.
She's won every award.
Wow. Those are two great recs. Okay. Not only about you. What do you got? What are you binging on?
I I'm so glad you're asking this question today and not like a month ago.
Okay.
Because I'm like you and I get overwhelmed and there's too many things to stream. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to watch BoJack Horseman again.
Not the same way. It's like, I'm just going to go back to The Office and Parks and Rec. Exactly.
Exactly. However, we're doing dry January in this house.
Okay.
And it's cold outside. So this whole weekend, I binged Yellow Jackets.
Ooh.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. I don't know how people waited a week between episodes. That sounds terrible. Always binge.
I'm starting with that. But the fact that you're binging Yellow Jackets, I'm doing it once a day right now because my brain just can't handle it, but it is very good. But any other thing that you love?
Another fun fact about me, wasn't really too big into podcasts. Sorry, I'm literally on a podcast right now.
I love that so much.
And I'm like, I gotta up okay. my podcast game. You know what podcast I started listening to and like binged all of the episodes like all at once? Maintenance Phase.
Maintenance Phase. Tell me about that one.
So it's about like the diet and health industry and like wellness weirdos and like fat phobia.
Today we are talking about
Fenfen.
Which sounds like the name of a zoo animal or something. Everyone I've told about this has no idea what it is.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It was a huge force in my life.
Yeah.
Fenfen was a combination of diet drugs that were prescribed by a doctor, mm-hmm. and they were a huge deal for about 3 years.
It's so good. I learned so much. I mean, I learned so much to the point where I was like, am I a bad person? Because I've done some of these things. I'm like, well, shit, you guys.
Wow.
I'm like driving down the interstate, listening to this podcast. Like, I've been a horrible person. It's so good. It's such a mind opener. It's great.
All right. So I'm going to totally fess up what I binged on over this weekend, because I have a love-hate relationship with the National Football League ever since Kaepernick.
Uh-oh.
But I could not keep my eyes off any of those playoff games. I was all in. I was like a 12-year-old kid from the Bronx again. I'm like, why am I into football this weekend? They suck you in. And my wife was like, I'm out of here. Just, I'm going upstairs. What are you, 17 again? I'm like, I don't watch a lot of football. But then I just got sucked in over the weekend. And now I'm like, that's the greatest NFL weekend ever. And I'm like, what am I doing? I'm defending the NFL. So anyway, I'm totally fessing up. That's where I'm at. But listen, Natalie Baptiste, opinion writer with HuffPost, and Danielle Moody, host of the show Woke AF and co-host of the podcast Democracy-ish. Thank you so much for joining me on In the Thick.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Uno, dos, tres.
And remember, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us because it really, really helps. And come on, that conversation, that's 5 stars right there. Just take a moment. To do it, it takes 2 seconds. Also, you can now listen to In the Thick on Pandora, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. Check us out on the web at inthethick.org. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at In the Thick Show. Like us on the Facebook and tell all your friends. In the Thick is produced by Noor Saudi, Pasha Nahata, Lisa Salinas, and our fellow Sarah Hershander, with editorial support from Charlotte Mangin. Our audio engineering team is Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, and Gabriela Baez. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional, kept in ZZK Records. We will see you next time. I promise Maria will be back. We'll be back together. Stay warm, people. Stay safe. Peace out. Today, it's the cold. I'm sorry. I'm freezing my ass off, guys. I'm trying to track in the middle of like 10 degree weather. And I'm like, blah, blah, blah.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.